Hi Dominique, and welcome to another edition of The Week Ahead. Just as timestamp is a little bit later than we normally do, so it's after, it's 5:30 London time on Friday, so people may be getting it on Sunday anyway, or even early Monday. But anyway, everyone's so going to get your words of wisdom after what was obviously a big week for the Fed and markets in general, and then how people should recalibrate, I guess, everything that's going on. But to recap quickly on the past week, what were your big takeaways outside of obviously your change early in the week, which you definitely got pushed back, and I think most sell side players were definitely staying with that 25, and you were right about the 50, and I guess kind of like we said, like, going to try and do the 50 with a more hawkish 50, but we could talk about the market's reaction now as well. So what were your biggest takeaways?
Oh, my biggest takeaway. The Fed is not too worried about inflation. Is very has a very asymmetric reaction function at the moment. They are taking the revisions, the benchmark revisions, the NFPs very seriously. We'll get those, I think, in February next year. There's been a slowdown in NFPs that really shook them up. And suddenly they've become very short-term data dependent. We just had Waller on CNBC basically admitting, implicitly saying that his pre-blackout speech was really for 25 basis points, because he's just told us that what made him go for 50 was in PC. Forecast based on CPI and PPI, 17 basis point, and looking at the last three data points, PCE is what is well below 2%. He's also told us that if OER was at 2%, core PCE would be below 1%. I mean, these are so my philosophy
A
on
lot
the
of if this, if that. Although your buddy is a Matt Stoller, I saw was talking about the fact that the rents are a third of the reason that rents are up or still up is because of this collusion through
Well,
the
that's what was quite extraordinary in the
We've never talked
declaration.
about that. Maybe that's too
No,
off.
but that's what is quite extraordinary in what Waller told us today. He said, I can't see many firms who have market power. And if you look at the share of profit in GDP, but maybe it's too long a piece of data for the Fed, I don't know. You see that the share of profit is close to a historical high. So, I'm not sure in
Right,
what
tell that to big tech.
universe. Well, but my philosophy is that what I think don't matter. It's the Fed who calls the shots. And clearly, they are, if you look at core PC, yes, they are base effect, but I mean, up to now they had told us that you could not just rely on one data point of the last few months. You had to take a long view. If you look at core PC year on year, you see that it's clearly troughed around 2.6%. So I think it's the I
Still
mean
love to.
Waller's, yeah, there is a great deal of faith that is being put in the linear extrapolation of a recent data trend. What can I say? What does it tell us? It tells us that the Fed is going to ignore inflation prints for at least a few months, and focus on demand, on economic growth.
I guess it brings up even a third question. One is like a year and a half ago, there was this whole theory going around or debate is should the Fed just accept 3%? Why is it 2%? And for different structural reasons happening in the world, either deglobalization or an aging workforce or whatever it is, should they accept 3%? And will they suddenly, just accept 3%? One, maybe they are accepting 3%, but then the other theory, which I think you and I have debated, because I've asked the question, is 2.8 doesn't necessarily mean 2.8. 2.8 most likely is meaning we're in a downtrend and it will continue to be heading down. Do you think that they are accepting this 3% is like the first question I have?
So at the moment, yes, definitely so. What happens if we are still at say 2.5% mid-year? That will be more of a test. And so that's the issue with this whole business of disinflation. The proof of the pudding is in the eating. We only find out, what their tolerance is like 6 months down the road. So, but for most investors, they have a fairly short time horizon. I mean, compared with an economic time horizon. So just, getting a sense of where the Fed is at for the next few months, I think should be helpful. And it's clear that inflation is not something they are going to pay much attention.
Second, just a very quick one, and I don't think we addressed back in August. So we had like one or two data prints. Okay, so it was the payrolls, but why do you think that some like pretty established people in markets were calling for like a 50 basis point cut in between markets? Sorry, in between meetings, when the numbers were like, they were still relatively similar to even just generally a 2018, 2019 payroll number. Why do you think that are people so worried about this create, were they so worried about this fat tail? Like, were you surprised that people were calling? Obviously you weren't calling, so you weren't in favor of it, but were you shocked that people were calling for a 50 basis point pre-meeting hike? Sorry, pre-meeting cut.
Well, I mean, yeah, because it wasn't justified by the data. But here is what I think is interesting about this, is that there is less and less tolerance for downside economic volatility, including on the part of the Fed. Because if you look at NFPs in 2019, and that's something I showed in this week's webinar, they were super volatile. I mean, there was 1 month where it was zero, and yet the Fed describes 2019 as a very strong labor market. So the volatility we've seen in NFP is nothing. And the Fed knows very well that the slowdown since June could very well reflect the impact of a tighter border
Yeah.
and less immigration. So I think on
I
the
think it was
part.
like we had the hurricane in Houston or something, like there was other things going on.
So yeah, it could be weather related, but the weather, I don't think extreme weather is worse now than before the pandemic. So I think what's changed is that people's tolerance for economic volatility has come down, possibly because the Fed itself has shown less and less tolerance. I mean, you saw the Fed policies during the pandemic. I mean, the scale of the easing, the guarantees for the private sector, there is a sense that maybe Fed money is free. What's wrong about it? Let's use it and let's not allow for any form of economic volatility, which, by the way, was like the Soviet system. In the Soviet Union, you had a few conglomerates who controlled the economy and then a central bank that passively financed everything.
Is
And
that where we're
to the risk of sounding provocative, we are moving a little bit in that direction when we have monetary policies that are not prepared to allow for some form of creative destruction.
Yeah, I mean, well, the other side would be real rates are like more than 2%, and that's pretty high in the stuff we've seen in the last 25 years. One thing, and I didn't get a chance to see a lot of his comments during the presser, but clearly the bottom third of workers in America are kind of are struggling, and I think that's a lot of the numbers. And Some of that may be because of higher rates. Now, if they go from 5.25 to 4.75, do I think that's gonna the interest rates on credit cards going from 25% to, I don't know, 23, will that significantly change? Probably not. But do you think that there is a case to be made? And I've seen things like this where they said, you know, the wealthy actually can be neutral to benefit from higher rates, but the poor are clearly struggling from
So,
higher rates. They're
100%.
happy, yeah. And so that is a case. That is a legitimate case.
No, I disagree with that. I
Okay.
think 100% on the distributional impact of Fed policies. By the way, also, if you look at the gap between low wage growth and high wage growth, so the low paid people are
It's been down.
heading, but now it's back. It's not as wide as it used to be.
Yeah.
So,
I guess the issue is that the lower end are much more impacted by inflation.
exactly.
Plus they have a much lower buffer, plus a lot of the things that did go up.
100%. But is this something that monetary policy should address? In my view, no. And it's very dangerous. And by the way, some people argue that the GFC was basically all about using monetary policy, prudential policy to spread home ownership. So we know the
Yeah, so
result.
when we try
And
and
no, but
tweak the numbers too much. Yeah, and I
that's the
guess,
danger.
yeah.
There is this view that
Okay.
the Fed balance sheet is this sort of a giant kitty, you know, no cost. Anyone can sort of feed at the trough. And so the expectations that are placed on central bankers become completely unrealistic. And it's hard for central bankers not to claim, you know, that omni science, that enormous power that people give them. It's very hard to resist the temptation to deliver on these unreasonable demands.
Right. I guess for them, the real difficult situation and is probably more that by going 50, they've just changed the game. And now the real expectation, even though the economy is basically fine, there's the idea of another 50. We were just talking before coming on, you know, that 75, even though they said no, 75 is already priced in for the next two meetings. So the market is already overreacting to that. And if they had done 25, they could still kind of ease in and still give the same message, you know, recalibrate, see how things are reacting. But by cutting 50, they just basically box themselves into a corner. So now, if they don't go 50 next time and they try and start steering it away, well, they may destabilize equity markets, you know, or the credit market. They've added like extra uncertainty. They've almost like compressed volatility even more now, but in a more dangerous, more fragile way by doing this, which is not
100%.
yeah.
Yeah. No, I completely
Yeah, we hadn't
agree.
talked about that, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, the point you made earlier about higher interest rate, I agree. I mean, if you compare I didn't use real interest rate. I use the difference between the actual Fed funds and the Taylor Rule Fed funds. So to get a sense of how tight the Fed is, and the Fed is, if you compare it with Greenspan or Bernanke or even Volcker, given where we are in terms of inflation, the Powell Fed is tighter than its predecessors. So that would be the case for you know for cutting. But the way this has been managed, you know, risk overshooting. I mean, we had, in my view, overeasing during the pandemic. Now the Fed has waited quite a while to cut and is starting to cut very fast and creating these expectations that we will make it hard to manage the process. So yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And then
Yeah.
what
All
happened?
like a lot of the kind of general, I guess, market professionals are sitting around. I mean, I don't know how many like really senior people at financial companies before is like, what's priced in the market makes no sense. Like, we're not getting to under 3% by next year with everything going on. And they come out and the Fed cuts 50, and like, that hasn't moved. It could even be more priced in. I mean, you know, the final rate by the end of next year. So
And the
it is
Fed is.
introducing a lot of extra potential fragility into the market.
Well, yes, I mean, and the thing is, a big uncertainty is the election. We're going to
What
get
election?
fairly, fairly radical. You know, in Los Angeles, you get to vote on like all kinds of
Oh yeah, like
popular. And then local officials. So you get a booklet which is like 50 pages long. I'm going to have to spend a whole weekend studying my booklet to figure out which button I need to
right.
press. But so yeah, it's back to the process. Starting with a bang with a 50 definitely makes it more difficult to manage. To manage the easing. And the issue is, as always, you know, is that if you look at the economy, it's not clear that you actually needed a cut.
Good at all. Yeah.
If you look at asset markets as well. And yet, you know, the Fed is tighter now than its predecessor, and you're starting to see some cracks, like access to credit, as you said, poorer households relying on the credit card debt. You also see that bank lending to SME, the quality is getting worse. So the case for easing, in my view, was more that the economy doesn't have enough resiliency if you get a big shock, say a really big extreme weather. But did you need to start, you know, with such a big move? I'm not sure.
I know. Okay, cool. And then, okay, let's hop into next week. That, I think
So
this is an important part and key part because this was such a big day, and this really, we want our clients to really understand our interpretation of what we think this means for the next couple of weeks, which I think is exactly what we were addressing then. Okay, and then on key data speeches next week on that kind of stuff.
Not much. Next week we get the end of month PC and personal consumption and income, and there the potential for surprise is not great. You know, Powell already told us it's going to be 2.7% for core PC. In terms of income and consumption, we continue to get robust consumption growth based on a low savings rate. We will get the S&P PMI. So that's, I mean, as you know, from an economic perspective, there isn't much correlation anymore between GDP and PMIs, but this is important from a market perspective. So we have the you know, we have the monitor on our website where clients can figure out, you know, what the market impact is likely to be and position accordingly. So that's the data part. In terms of speeches, Powell and Williams are giving welcome speeches at the New York Fed annual Treasury Market Conference. I don't think they will talk about the economy. In any event, it's not a Q&A, it's more like a meet and greet. So, from that perspective, not much happening. The really important speech, of course, is Powell's speech to the National Association of Business Economists, which is the following week.
Okay.
So, hopefully, we have a quiet week.
Yeah. I mean, I guess obviously the jobless claims, just
Yeah, but
in Michigan, everyone.
job. Yeah, jobless claims are coming down.
Coming in, but the volatility of it is so low, I guess.
Yeah, the potential for market moving surprises is quite low. And anyway, the Fed has reduced downside risks so much with its. I'm being sarcastic here.
Exactly.
Basically, they have ruled out the potential for negative economic surprises. And I'm being sarcastic because I do think that.
I was yelling. I was again. You will never see another recession.
Well, yeah, that's it. That's the idea that policy can and should be used to reduce all economic downside, which to my mind is not very consistent with a market-based economy. But
That's also a great way to build a very fragile environment.
to financial fragility, definitely.
Okay, cool. So I'll quickly highlight some stuff from this past week. So I know we've been flagging this for a while, but we actually put the trade on, which I think we still really like, even though Dalian's come up a bit. But I think this is just a bit of position unwinding, and I guess the BOJ saying overnight they're not in a rush to hike rates, but we're still in this environment where most global central banks are cutting, and they're either on neutral or hiking. And I think I will speak for myself. I think we're in a very different environment from people thinking this is the yen is a safe haven. And I think in the end we'll behave differently. But obviously, if it's the market's in a super bullish risk environment, it's probably not going to do amazing. It still has super very low rates as a funding currency, but in a more neutral environment, I still think the dollar can go down significantly and will against the yen, and that's our one of our core views. With that, there's also Mirza added a short dollar long Brazil, grabbing the high yield, but also again, emerging markets really benefiting. And they're really the traditionally the ones that benefit the most from an aggressive Fed cutting cycle. So that's there. I think some other key things. Bank of England, yes. So I think we're pretty confident that they've set the stage for a November cut. So that's quite important. But obviously interesting that they didn't cut this week despite the Fed going 50. There's just a bunch of new stuff. I think if people also hopefully people saw on the weekly webinar, but one of the things that we now have under the monitor section is the EM flow monitor. So that shows aggregate flows across EM, debt and equity, also can break it down at a country level. Super interesting thing. Been working on collating a lot of this information for like the last 6 months, but this in some of the data goes back 20 years. And please reach out if for our professional clients if you are looking to get access to that data directly as well. And as Dominic highlighted, we're going to be releasing some new things on the event monitor, especially looking at kind of the like implied vols and what's priced in to compare. And we're also working on a much shorter time horizon to show the impact on these data releases and what we expect. And then also tying in a lot of the work that Sam's doing around the economic prediction stuff. Also within the next kind of 1 to 1.5 weeks, we should be releasing the new updated results of our AI work on kind of central bank speeches and also the relationship to different markets. In this case, we'll start with the pretty tight relationship of our model sentiment index to 2-year yields in the US, kind of using that as kind of the benchmark, and the results have been awesome. So that would be something to look out for. Outside of that, wish everyone a wonderful weekend. Dominique, you a wonderful weekend. Any parting words?
No, likewise, I think we are all deserving of a quiet week to recover from all this volatility.
Exactly. Okay, cool. All right, good luck. Thank you. Bye.